Welcome to the Delling Pod with me, James Delling Pod. And this is a moment, I think, that a lot of people have been waiting a very, very long time for. You, special friend, I'm sure have been waiting a long time. My guest this week, and he's just a guest, is Dick.
Hello, everyone.
Dick, how long has it been since we actually did a sort of old original podcast, you know, not like a live cast?
Well, I think the answer would have to be too long.
Too long.
But first of all, can you hear me all right? We seem to have an unusually good line for a change.
Yeah, it's I think one of the anomalies of this chaotic breakdown of everything is it's probably cleared some bandwidth.
That would clearly be the answer to this one.
That would be it.
You're quite techie when it comes to it, aren't you? You know your stuff.
I know. Yeah, bandwidth. And because it does. We could almost be in the same room.
Yeah. Uncanny.
Uncanny, yeah.
That clear. But God bless technology, eh? It allows us to do this because clearly, you know, I wouldn't be taking massive risks like, you know.
Well, I mean, let's face it. You and I were just so wrong about coronavirus. We thought that it was just like at best, at worst, bad flu. But we now realise it is the Armageddon disease that
weren't
justifies
we told? Ebola times 10.
Yeah, but I think you're doing a disservice to coronavirus. Actually, there, I think times a Google. Yeah,
I see what you did there.
Yeah, times a Google. That's how bad it is. I want to bring. What's worrying me at the moment. I'm seeing too much despair around, and I just kind of think, look, you and I are both into the books of Bernard Cornwell.
Uh-huh.
And one of the recurring themes, certainly at Cressy and Agincourt, which are the battles I've been looking at recently, you saw that in the Henry V. That famous scene in Henry V where Henry goes round his camp on the eve of the battle and he sort of susses out the general mood and he offers words of comfort and they're all completely shitting themselves because they think, you know,
certain
death awaits them. And maybe certain death does await, in fact it does certainly await us at some stage.
Well, yeah.
But I just think, okay, worst case scenario is that Trump hasn't got a plan up his sleeve, that he doesn't invoke the executive order, he doesn't bring in the military to stop what is obviously, I mean, obvious to me and to you, I think, has been a coup. And a very anti-democratic, well, I suppose coups by nature are anti-democratic, orchestrated by a number of bad actors, none of whom has best interests at heart. If he doesn't have a plan and he doesn't, you know, bring in the military in the next couple of weeks, then I suppose what we've got is a very, very long guerrilla struggle, haven't we? I mean, it's going to be like to the lake. It's going to be like, I hate invoking Star Wars, but it does seem to be, you know, it's the rebels against the Death Star.
One of my probably a mutual Twitter follower was describing, she's French, and she was describing how her grandmother used to talk about her utter despair during the Nazi occupation. And I know we keep on harking back to we are the French resistance in this scenario, but yeah. Imagine that, you know, the Nazis have invaded your country, they've taken over, and there is nothing you can do about it. And there were those who put up and accepted it as the new normal, and there were those, probably, well, we know a lot fewer than who claimed otherwise at the end of the war, who went off into underground bunkers and plotted and planned and sabotaged and did whatever they could.
Got their fingernails pulled
and
out.
Got their fingernails shot. Pulled out and shot and tortured and guillotined. All sorts of that going on. But imagine just being that civilian that has to every day see the occupying forces. And it must be a little bit like that because it wasn't over very quickly, was it?
No.
But 5 years of, you know, 4 or 5 years of misery.
Somebody tweeted out, and this dates it as well, because that comment comes from a time when I check Twitter every day and become, you know, Twitter was my kind of my life, which is a bit sad, isn't it? But it was my information source.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember about a month ago, somebody tweeted out a photograph of a soldier at 1917, I think, in Passchendaele. And I envied, I envied this guy living in that era. I mean, number one, I suppose, because I've read enough books about the First World War to know that a lot of the people who fought in the trenches, it was their, they loved it. I mean, oddly enough, and it was there.
This is going to wind up the right people so badly, because they hate all this. Oh, the Dellingpole brothers think they would have been great in the war. I mean,
that's not my point. I think we could have been.
Shitting ourselves in the bottom of a trench like every other soldier.
We'd have been really shit. No, I suppose what I envied that guy in the trenches was that there was a defined enemy, and ultimately the war was going to end. It had to end within a few years, because they were just going to run out of resources. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't going
men,
to...
Men, material, exactly. Food, money, everything.
Whereas, not wishing to be pessimistic, but if POTUS doesn't have something to pull out of the hat, and I'm still hoping he does, I think what we're experiencing is a Chinese takeover of the world, Chinese Communist Party takeover of the world. It doesn't really matter how deeply involved with the Biden administration China is, although I think it very much is. It's more that the West seems to have borrowed, aped a lot of the worst things about Communist China, including the social credit system,
mm-hmm.
whereby ultimately we're going to be dependent for our bread and butter on whether or not we toe the line, keep our noses clean,
travel,
whether we travel or not. I mean, I've already reached the stage where I'm resigned to the possibility that I'll never be able to travel again.
Yeah, that we've seen all the foreign countries we're going to. It is an awful thought.
It is. There's just so much as we've lost so much in the last year. And what amazes me, Dick, one of the amazing things, is that I look around at my fellow people in the conservative commentariat. I mean, I've been rude elsewhere about the Lolbertarian think tankers and how rubbish they've been.
Mm-hmm.
And the conservative MPs. I mean, yeah, where was the Mogfather? when the Nazis took over, where was the Mogfather? Was he with the resistance? Why no? It seems that he was with Monsieur Pétain.
Well, I wonder
Marshall,
how many
Marshall Pétain.
I wonder how many of these people will, if we do triumph, will ultimately say, "Yay! I was with you guys all along. I was alongside you in those trenches."
They won't even care. They won't. Anyway, I think it's going to be a longer struggle than that. I don't think it's going to be a. Oh, I don't want to be too pessimistic. But what amazes me is how. This has been happening. What's been happening is clear to all of us who've been paying attention, that everything from the nature of the coup in America against President Trump to the coronavirus being a fairly routine flu, which has been blown out of all proportion to achieve a particular political end on a global scale. What amazes me is the number of people, even quite sassy out there people, I mean, I'm thinking of Douglas, for example, who just have gone, nah, 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 you know, cover their eyes, cover their ears. It's not happening. Don't want to know.
They're falling on an almost daily basis. The ones you thought were completely sound. And it's almost like they're being got at one by one. And, you know, it's a bit, you know, that who is getting at them and how and with what.
Well, that's the thing, Dick. I just cannot conceive what anyone could have said or done to them or promised them to make them act against the interests of truth and their personal integrity.
Is it the same sort of thing that led away by the elbow during a Davos meeting and...
What, shown the secret room where it happens?
Well, possibly. It's that level of, conspiracy theory nutcase type stuff, isn't it? I mean, but what would make you go to Davos a conservative and come back a communist?
Yeah, well, so... I was comparing notes with a friend who's sort of more or less where we are up to a point. But, you know, there are degrees, aren't there? There are people will always have that thing which they can show to demonstrate they're not quite as out there.
Or, I'm mad, but I'm not quite Dellingpole.
Yeah, exactly. Well put. Like,
is there a T-shirt in that? A new Dellingpod T-shirt.
Maybe there is. So it would be things like, I believe in, what do I believe in? I believe in a certain level of conspiracy theory, but I'm certainly not a 9/11 truther, or I'm certainly not a lizard-headed master race person.
And yet, if you challenge them on what happened to building number 7 during 9/11, they're like, well, you know, buildings sometimes collapse when other buildings go down around them.
People don't want to know, and it's been discomforting for, well, obviously members of my family who aren't quite as far down the rabbit hole as I am, and I can see it. even some of my patrons on Patreon and Subscribestar, some of them are thinking, oh, I used to like James Dalrymple's stuff, but he's gone a bit weird, and you hear some of the comments from London Calling with Tobes. We seem to have divided our listeners between those who get infuriated, I mean infuriated, by Toby's ongoing denial that there is anything weird about what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, I always put it down to cock-up rather than conspiracy. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, fine, Toby, that's a real NPC view, and it's getting tiresome. And there are those who think that I've hijacked the show with my tinfoil wackiness, and that I've made myself irrelevant.
Well, no, let's face it, people aren't tuning in for two blokes who agree with each other on absolutely everything. You know, you've got to have the you know, it's a Laurel and Hardy kind of thing going on, isn't there? Is that that the best example I could have used?
Well, yeah.
Maybe not.
Cannon and Ball.
Chuckle Brothers.
Yeah. I worry, as some of our the show's fans do, that there will come a point where there's almost no point in us talking to one another, and I sometimes feel that. I'm very fond of Toby, but I'll give you an example. So in fact, I upbraided Toby cruelly.
It's become a daily occurrence, actually,
yeah,
hasn't it?
Yes, well, it has, yeah, yeah. And I do feel a bit...
He takes it very well. He is quite thick-skinned, but like you, he's had a lifetime of attacks from people who really don't like him, and I think what he will take is attacks from people who like him.
Well, maybe. I don't know. He's got this... I've done this before, and I hate doing it, but he has this sort of slight Christ-like quality where he sort of he turns the other cheek. He's got that experience where he lost his job in working of some incredibly minor position on an incredibly minor educational quango.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he got
even made it onto the first day of work. It was,
and his response was not the response I would have had. His response was, yes, I must learn to be a better person and sort of, I don't know, take it better. Whereas my response would be, well, the establishment is horribly compromised and I don't want to be part of it anymore because it's just stopping me telling the truth and it's cramping my style, which is where I've gone.
Yeah.
I mean
that in this whole crisis, fabricated or otherwise, I've become semi friends with a few semi celebrities, let's say, and noting how the ones who are strongly lockdown skeptical have to consider their jobs, their roles, their reputations if they stick their necks out too far. Now, the ones who are obviously going to be able to do so are the ones with nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. But those who still have a career have got to cling on to it. So this is the key to, you've got to divest yourself of anything that could hold you back. And you can afford to do that. I mean, there's nothing they can hold over you anymore, is there?
No. I hope not. The example I was going to give you was, okay, so Tobes copies Ivor Cummins. It takes Ivor Cummins' line that there's going to be no second wave.
Mm-hmm.
And then recently Tobes goes on Newsnight and is up against the appalling Ian Dunt. I mean, I used to think that people who use rhyming slang names to go with Ian Dunt were being unfair, but actually I'm not sure that I came away with that feeling after I'd seen him perform against
being Tobes. Unfair to the piece of anatomy they're comparing him to, yeah. I would have thought.
So Toby was up against, was being interviewed by Emily Maitlis.
I did see the clip. Yeah.
And Emily Maitlis is, I mean, she's BBC through and through, BBC biased. And she was constantly interjecting and trying to get Toby on the back foot in the way she didn't do with Ian Dunn.
Of course not. He was given a free pass.
Given a free pass. And I was, perhaps unfairly or not, I was cross with Toby for having put himself in that situation. As I said, when you go out into the lists, you're not just representing yourself, you're also representing your party.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, every time you go onto the BBC, you are fighting on terrain of the enemy's choosing. And to continue the jousting analogy, you're sort of going in with a broken lance and no sword, or with one hand tied your hand, or your horse hobbled. With out-of-date armour, exactly. And also, you've got probably not just your opponent jousting, but you've got the marshals joining in and attacking you when they're...
Yeah,
in the middle of the fight,
we've seen it in 100 films based on unfair jousting competitions.
Yeah, all those films.
Well, no, I'm thinking of A Knight's Tale and things like that.
Oh, I see. Ah, okay, fair enough. I haven't seen A Knight's Tale, but I'm sure that would happen.
Yeah,
yes. I learned my lesson. The Andrew Neil experience was a watershed for me,
mm-hmm.
And I don't think Andrew Neil is a neutral, honest broker.
No, but
by any stretch, I think he was the BBC man through and through all along. I learned my lesson. I will not play that game ever again. And I think that, you see, the problem is that Toby was being got on the subject of this alleged massive spike in the hospitals in London, mm-hmm. being overwhelmed, and They put it to him that but you said there was going to be no second spike, and there has been a second spike. And the thing is, I think the sensible response, the brave response, the true response would have been, well, I'm not sure that I trust any of these statistics. That we know that the first wave of coronavirus was a genuine massive spike, as you would expect from a new virus.
Where there was no known treatment. Going at the time.
Well, so not so much that, going through a population which had maybe possibly 30% immunity or less, you know, from previous mm-hmm. SARS-1, but certainly there was lots of dry tinder to die. So inevitably you got the spike. The second thing, the tale we've experienced in the winter is it could be put down to a lot of things. Winter is the time when viral respiratory infections strike people. I think some of it might be flu. I think maybe some of these deaths are... We know that, say you've got terminal cancer and you happen to... But within 28 days of your death, you happen to take one of those coronavirus tests and you've got coronavirus, your death is put down to coronavirus.
So, we know there's a heck of a lot of within 28 days of a positive test people.
There is a there is a system out there which wants to persuade us that this is the deadliest, wants to justify the lockdown regardless of what's actually happening. They're not letting people film in hospitals. They're only letting the sort of doctors...
You get arrested if you try and film in a hospital.
Exactly.
Only woman in Gloucester.
Exactly. So only the only people who are speaking out in the NHS are kind of left-wing activist doctors, and there's more than a few of those. The ones that know the truth are being gagged. Anyway, so what happens when Toby goes on this show? He admits that he then made a mistake, or brief mea culpa, and you're thinking, you've just fed the enemy propaganda machine. This is war. You don't, in World War II, you don't do a guest appearance on Joseph Goebbels or
Lord Hall
speaks to Toby Young, our special guest. You don't do it.
No.
It's more serious than that. We are at war. We have been at war for some time. Anyway, that's my view. Oh, yes, God, I've got a, yeah, good point.
Well, I think I'm right in saying that in 2018, there were 64,000 deaths from flu.
Right.
Okay, so...
2017, 2018, it was a bad sort of winter.
It was a particularly bad year, and there's normally about 20,000 who die. Now, whenever people are quoting figures, the answer always needs to be compared to what? What's the baseline for that?
Yeah.
What is the normal figure for that? So, if I was to say 600,000 people die in the UK annually. Yeah. It's a shocking number of people, but that is roughly the number of people.
Every one of those was alive before they died, Dick. Every single one of them. And do you know what?
What?
Every one of them had a mother and a father, and most of them had relatives, and their lives were... Every sperm was sacred.
And their
every
lives
sperm was
were,
great.
Were blighted by their death.
They certainly were. They were brought to an end.
So, let's have a little bit of... a compared to what answer when people hit you with the numbers of people who are dying, because 9 times out of 10, maybe even 99 times out of 100, they will come back with, well, I don't know what the normal figure would be, but it's a pretty horrific number, because we've never had to confront these death numbers before.
No.
They haven't even really entered our consciousness. But if you're going to go out with a horrific figure, have it relative, have it in comparison to something.
Yeah, I agree. This brings me back to the point I was trying to make about Toby, and people like Toby. That once you go down the rabbit hole and you realise just how corrupt and compromised the world is, and how tainted politicians are, how tainted the system is, how the kind of gangster elite which runs the world, the uber rich gangster elite, and the power of central banks, and the way that the markets are completely manipulated in the interests of the very very few.
Add on to that big pharma and big tech.
Yeah. When you realize all that, it's very very hard to take seriously, or even to be able to debate with, people who are still stuck in the paradigm of, well, I don't want to say anything so extreme that will stop me being allowed to write for the Mail and being given a lucrative column there now and again, or to keep my job on the Spectator.
Well, there's only a hop, skip and a jump from that to, well, yes, of course I'll write a picture denouncing Toby Young, write a piece denouncing Toby Young and James Dellingpole for you. Yes, I'll happily do that for... that promotion or that guarantee of permanent work. It's not a biggie betraying your friends when you've already compromised yourself in that way.
Well, I was thinking there was a piece that really annoyed me in the Mail today. Guy Adams is one of the Mail's best investigative reporters. What was his piece today? He'd done a piece about... this is just like... Let's put it in context. The leader of the free world has just been... The country that leads the free world has just experienced a coup by the hard left, orchestrated by China, And instead of addressing this major, major problem for us all, because it's all connected with the Great Reset and it's all connected with the restructuring of the global economy so that our money will be worthless and we won't be able to... let's not, it gets too depressing. But instead of talking about this, the Mail and all the other UK newspapers are promoting the line that, yeah, Trump really, really, really just pushed the boat out too far this time. He whipped up his followers into a frenzy and they charged Congress and four people died. And it's really, I mean, maybe he should be impeached now. Maybe he should be turned out of the White House. This is their story. And then you've got a story by Guy Adams, investigative reporter, talking about how, about QAnon and about how Jody, the brother of the model Jody Kidd. I mean, like, how old's Jody Kidd now? She must be getting on a bit.
No longer a kid.
Our age, no longer a kid. It's like she's not the name that trips off the tongue. No. Everyone's breakfast. So I wonder what. Oh, she's in the media again. Jody Kidd. Jody Kidd's brother.
Kidd's brother.
This was the shock revelation of the story. Is a keen member or keen subscriber to the theories of QAnon. And then they sort of listed these outlandish and outrageous theories that there is a kind of paedophile conspiracy and that, you know, banking families like the Rothschilds might be stirring up the world in their image. And I mean, a lot of the stuff is actually true, you know, the Great Reset and stuff. Mm-hmm. The Mail prefers to dismiss as conspiracy, presumably up until the point where it's too late for us to do anything about it, at which point... The Mail readers are going to wake up, like all the kind of normies, and they're going, hang on a second, why did nobody tell us about this? Why did Toby never mention this? Why did Douglas, you know,
well, it's a bit like this one about the microchipping technology that will be embedded onto your skin to show that you have had a vaccine. And the technology is out there. It can be done. And to some degree, it could be seen as, it's the sort of thing that will be useful in society going forward if you are of that sort of mindset. So this is then used as another conspiracy theory that, oh, you anti-vaxxers think you're going to have a microchip injected into you. How ridiculous. Oh, I don't want the vaccine because they put microchips in it. And so they conflate two theories to take them both down at once when one isn't even a theory. It's been written about and it is out there. Technology is available.
We've all been guilty of this, and I realize now why people who were down the rabbit hole before me get frustrated with how I was before I went down the rabbit hole.
Oh, I get a lot of people contacting me directly for access to you, who say your brother doesn't quite get XYZ, right. You should put him straight on this. He needs educating. Right, all this stuff.
Of course, that's immensely tiresome. But things like how in the early days of the protests, you know, I went to some of the earliest anti-lockdown rallies, and they were mostly anti-vaxxers and anti 5G people, and I realised that. When I read reports about it in the newspapers, the significance of these rallies was completely dismissed by the newspapers, no matter how many people turned out, because these were crazies who were anti-vaxxers and 5G. And at the time, I thought, well, it is odd that you've got these kind of cranky people. And what I now realise is that this is part of the mainstream media's attempts to push the establishment narrative, that they are pushing probably the line of black propagandists of the government, which is just ridicule the people involved in these things. They're not real people. They're not reps. They're anti-vaxxers. Mm-hmm. And so they don't even need to engage with the arguments. You know, lockdowns are bad. Well, anti-vaxxers say they're bad, so it doesn't mean anything.
Well, I went to one of the early ones in Birmingham, and it was not a huge attendance, but it was a very good-natured gathering. And this was at a time before the police were going in heavy-handed. And I read reports about it later that were clearly talking about a different gathering, because it was saying it was mostly middle-aged white men. Now, I saw it quite clearly a 50-50 balance between male and female. A lot of black, white, yellow. It was incredibly ethnically mixed. Yep, a proper cross-section of society.
Yeah.
Some of them well-spoken poshos. A lot of them typical working-class people who had, one way or another, had their eyes open. But it was a genuine cross-section of society. Yeah. And all the, you know, very friendly for it. It did feel like we were part of something. But gets utterly dismissed by the media because they'll be there for maybe 5 minutes, take a photo of the group that does happen to be middle-aged white men, and then that is the picture of the demo.
Yeah. Dick, I wanted to just talk about something very important, which is that line from Supper's Ready, hand in hand, gland in gland.
Yeah.
Doesn't it make you feel slightly uncomfortable?
because you can't think of a gland that could be in a gland.
Well, okay, gland. Okay, how can I avoid being explicit here? Gland, I'm thinking, is it two blokes wanking each other off? Well, I mean, but gland, when you think about gland, or is it, okay, mammary gland.
Is that why you're so troubled by it?
I know that you've been listening to it recently, and I just love that song. I just think it's fantastic.
All, 24 minutes of it.
Yes. What do you think, what is your favourite bit of Supper's Ready?
God, it's difficult, isn't it? Supper's Ready is a journey, isn't it? It to not sound too corny, it's a roller coaster ride of a song. You know, yes. The quiet bits, the loud bits, the ridiculous bit. I think A Flower has to be the moment you're waiting for.
I don't know, because every time I hear A Flower, I automatically think of Peter Gabriel dressed as a flower.
As a narcissist.
And I think that Gabriel is basically a wanker. Because not least, it's not just that he was annoying at the time. It's when I was doing my book Watermelons. Mm-hmm. He's a big part of the problem. I mean, he's involved in the Club of Rome or one of the offshoots.
Mm-hmm.
He's a kind of part of the United Nations. I'm sure he's into Agenda 2030. I'm sure he's massively into the Great Reset.
He probably plays all the gigs at the Trilateral Commission's annual dinner dance.
Their annual pedo party, probably. allegedly. yes. But I think my favourite bit is... Well, I quite like that Steve Hackett bit where he goes off on his guitar.
Yeah.
But I like the... I know a farmer who looks after the farm. Mm-hmm. With water pure, he cares for his harvest, isn't it?
Yeah, and I know a fireman who looks after the fire. Now, this our stepsister, Emily, yeah, once came up to me and said, what does that all mean? And first of all, I was completely taken aback by the fact that she'd even started listening to Genesis, because it is so...
Yeah.
It is so... Public school,
public school,
boy,
far,
yeah. But I had no answer for it. A bit like your gland in gland thing. I'd never really given it any consideration other than the fact it rhymes with hand in hand.
And think about how old they were when they wrote that. I mean, think about pop stars. One forgets they're in their early 20s.
Yeah,
they probably weren't the top of the class.
We all knew them. Not Genesis, obviously, but the boys at school with us who were way more concerned about getting out of the lesson and getting back onto their guitar because they were in the school, yes, band. And they
were never the brightest, were they?
Never the brightest, but would be much happier on their guitars than doing anything else. So, yeah, it was going to be that lot, wasn't it?
Although, is that a good example? The guy from Weezer, didn't he go to Harvard?
Probably not a good example then.
No,
is it?
Well, that's the thing, Harvard. I mean, it's like shit, isn't it? They're all shit.
Well, they weren't then, though, were they?
I don't know. Weezer generation is probably sort of in between. I would have said that my generation was my time was. I had the golden age.
We had this conversation before. We thought your generation was all great as far as Oxford is concerned, but time has proved otherwise.
They've all. Who has not failed us? from my generation.
Was it just you? Toby.
No, yeah, and Aidan Hartley, Robert Twigger.
If any of your contemporaries are listening, they're now going to be hoping for a name check, or possibly hoping you don't mention them.
Yes, exactly. I know. That's the thing. I'm sure that loads of people, certainly in journalism, say, have conversations like, well, not that they ever talk about me, but if they did, it would be, whatever, oh, James Dellingpole.
I used to know him, but I couldn't really say that I know him anymore. Something like that?
Not quite that. No, I think it's more just like, they feel sorry for me.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever happened to his, he used to write quite well, and he's now just like, he's now a freak.
Yeah, but they'll say, oh, but he always was a little bit out there. The signs were always there.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, of course, when he started doubting climate change, that was the first.
Well, look, that, you know what the doubting climate change has done? It's put you in a position where you've seen all of this before. You've been labelled a denier before and all that it entails. And, you know, it's strengthened your armour. It's meant that you've come out this side, and now you're apparently a COVID denier, which is as nonsensical as being a climate denier.
Where was my armour made?
Probably in the fires of Mount Doom.
Oh, that good. I thought you were going to say something like Turin or something. Where was the super duper armour that could resist arrows to a degree? And
what, Mithril?
Mithril.
Am I mixing up reality and fantasy?
Yeah, but I think that's all right. I think we're allowed to do that.
Right.
You haven't got any games for me, have you? Or any kind of things?
I didn't have enough preparation.
No, that's fine.
You sprung it on me. But, you know, I did have something I did want to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
I know Twitter is almost dead to us now, but I had a little bit of a moment on, there was a Good Morning Britain tweet that went out, and I wrote it down. Should people be rewarded for snitching on their neighbour who breaks lockdown rules? Okay.
Is it a yes or no?
Well, they wanted people to phone in and say what they think about this. They were very pleased that they'd come up with this idea. It was completely their work. No one was proposing it. They came up with this as an idea. And the post had 382 likes. And so I quote tweeted it saying, "Today we ask the Nazis, were they all bad?" Which has now had 3,600 likes. So it's a nice way of kind of owning shows like Good Morning Britain, which are just, by doing things like that, they are spreading that insidious evil by coming up with something that isn't even a proposed policy. But little by little, they make us accept that this might be an idea that should be put out there. You know,
I haven't done this podcast yet. And I didn't listen to the podcast that, was it Sudan of C and Simon did the other day with Ralph?
Yeah.
From the NRX guy. And he was talking about, understand, the cathedral.
Yeah. He was explaining what the cathedral was. I mean, you pretty much know by now what the cathedral was. But
it's a towering edifice of elaborate evil.
Well, that's very nicely put, yeah.
Yeah.
But it is the reason that, for instance, people in HR don't need to be told, you must do this, you must do that. They already know how to act within the boundaries of what's expected of them as part of the cathedral. Everyone in the cathedral knows how to behave in a certain way,
yes,
depending on where they're at. So there isn't a big instruction going out to tell them to do these things, to make sure that there is an acceptance of Black Lives Matter within the company they're working in, and that they need to write some new HR guidelines that make hate speech unacceptable. That sort of thing. They're acting within the cathedral, so they all already know how to behave.
Yes, it's the left-wing hive mind, which of course puts us us conservative types at a disadvantage, because we are individuals.
We don't accept a hive mind.
No, we feel uncomfortable with it, because that kind of goes against our religion, that we're all different, and we yeah. But yes, what was I thinking there? People have been on common purpose courses, for example. That kind of ensures that even though you would think that individual companies would have their individual policies, actually they're all moving towards the same goal, which is why we're in such trouble now. Why it's happened so quickly, apparently, suddenly, whereas to those who've been with IS2C, this is the culmination of decades of.
I was thinking about this when, for years, we've been, you notice a big company is sold and it's been bought by a Chinese concern. This might have been 10, 20 years ago. You go, oh yeah, that's going to come back and bite us on the arse one day. And it was just kind of a throwaway comment that little by little, China are buying us and soon they'll own us. And a throwaway comment is now is the bite on the arse. It really is coming home. And as businesses go out, as inevitably they will, they go out of business, we've got to keep an eye on who's buying them up, who's buying the properties that are abandoned. I mean, we've got to keep an eye out for the next big thing, which is going to be universal basic income. That's going to be something that inevitably they will try. So, I mean, if we point out all these things that we expect to see, and then when they happen, it might win us over one or two waverers who might say, they called it a few months ago.
It will. And we win over those waverers by keeping our positions pure. We don't, to use another medieval analogy, what we do is that we stay within our fortresses. We don't go on vainglorious sallies out,
better word,
to meet our better armed opponents, our more numerous opponents, or at least more powerful opponents. Just because that's what we feel we should do to demonstrate our martial prowess or whatever, or because we haven't got a chance. It's like when Toby goes on to the BBC with the appalling what's her face,
mateless.
Do you know what
that means? She's got no mates.
I saw this mateless. Yeah, that's right. I saw this. I remember it was about 10 years ago, and on the Spectator, I remember there being a sort of flurry of excitement within the Spectator that Emily Maitlis was coming to the Spectator party and this, you know, she came into the offices and it was like, I remember thinking like we care why this is, but I should have guessed then that the Spectator was more interested in the access of the BBC than it was in being this kind of a conservative journal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the signs were there that the people that you thought were going to, you know, the Jacob Rees-Mogg's, I thought the Mogg father was a Thatcherite. He was going to fight for Thatcherite values. I thought that.
Well, there's still people saying that he's keeping his powder dry.
Are they?
Yeah. This is why we haven't heard from him lately.
Do they write in red crayon? And
with their tongue between their teeth,
I think
as they're
those
writing.
People do. I just
clutching the crayon in their little fist.
Look, I think there's time for. I think we're still in a period where we're allowed a bit of hopium. Do you know about hopium?
No, tell me about hopium.
Hopium are the places that you go on the internet. What's he called? X22 or something? People who put together these very plausibly presented arguments where they say, look, things like, think about this. Ever since he wrote The Art of the Deal, and even before then, Trump has always been in the business of never, 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 never giving up. And that when you're opponent thinks he's flawed you completely, that's when you strike back. Do you think it's likely, given that Donald Trump is going to, and his family are going to be destroyed if he loses this, his businesses are going to be ransacked and they're going to be regulated against? I mean, you've got criminals going into the White House now, into the Oval Office, if Biden wins. Do you think Trump is going to allow this to happen? And do you not think that he hasn't been prepared for this since 2016, at least?
Mm-hmm.
Do you not think that when he, you know, he's always planned a 2-year term, and the second term was going to be biblical for the deep state? Do you not think this is going to happen? That's hopium. It's right. Like, I'm a bit skeptical of. A lot of these people who've been telling us what's going to happen have been proved wrong by events. You know, the people who said, "Yeah, Mike Pence, Vice President Mike Pence is going to when it comes to January the 6th, he's going to send those votes back to the contested states, mm-hmm. and they're going to have to, and then it's going to be decided." It didn't happen, did it?
Didn't happen.
So that's the downside of hopium. They build up your hopes, and then
there's a come down from the hopium high.
Yeah, it's like it's worse than an opium come down. It's a what? I don't know. It's a what's
crack? I don't know.
Yeah, I would imagine that crack has a pretty bad. In fact, it does, doesn't it? It's got the word. I took some crack once.
Did you?
Yeah, it's great. Really good.
Is this going to get us banned?
Well, I don't know what's going to get banned. Did I not tell you about the crack story?
No. Oh, you think you may have done, but
okay.
My memory isn't what it was.
Okay. It was many years ago, and I was on holiday in Grenada, and I
remember when we used to be able to go abroad. Yeah. Anyway, carry on.
I went to try and score some weed. I thought, bloody hell, we're in the West Indies. I mean, you've got to get some, you know, how could you not smoke some weed?
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, we sit on the veranda, you know. And look, we were staying in this hotel on a golf course, so I thought I better wander around, and I found this. I don't know, the groundsman in charge of the golf course, and I thought he looked a likely character. Oh no, that's right. He was the guy in charge of the water sports, and his name was Gold. His name was, mm-hmm. but he didn't pronounce.
I hope you're not getting Gold in trouble.
I think it's quite unlikely that Goal is still working at this particular hotel, which I haven't named anyway. I can't remember.
He might be the manager by now.
Goal. And I said, you know, have you got any marijuana or weed or whatever? And he said, no, I've only got some cocaine. And I said, okay, right. And he showed it to me, and it was this. It was in these little rocks. It wasn't. And I said, well, it doesn't look like. It looks like
it's a bit lumpy,
crack,
isn't it?
To me. And he said, yeah, man, you roll it up in your cigarette and you smoke it like that. And so I said, well, okay, if you say so. So he said, you crumble it up. And so I crumbled it up. There were two rocks, and I put one in the hotel safe, thinking that, well, I didn't. I thought if I was seized by a crack frenzy, that I didn't want to, you know, I might immediately want to seize the other rock.
Mm.
So I put it in the hotel safe. There's a flaw in this argument. You'll find out soon.
Right.
So, crumbled it up into this cigarette, into a joint, and smoked it. And it was delicious. It tasted like toffee banana. Absolutely, it was just like yummy. And I it felt really good.
You were on your own?
No, with the wife.
Okay.
And I can say that now because her parents are dead, so they might have been upset otherwise. we smoked it, and we thought, this is bloody fantastic. Oh, we better get the other rock out straight away. so we smoked the other rock, and it wasn't as good as the first one, and it faded amazingly quickly. But while it was in effect, I wanted to go around all the other chalets in the hotel and just meet the other people and just talk shit at them. I mean it was a very powerful urge as well. Now, I'm not sure whether that's a kind of typical crack experience, because actually I think, you know, we didn't smoke it in a crack pipe. I suppose what we were doing was the equivalent of smoking opium rather than injecting mm-hmm. heroin. You know, there are degrees, aren't there? But I think that sort of counts as having taken crack.
Well, I think what they say about crack is it's just so nice that that's what drives you to I've got to carry on doing this forever. And you can see no reason why you wouldn't.
See, the thing is, things are getting so bad that maybe the only answer is for us to be on crack all the time. But but the flaw in that, I know, it's not quite the same. But I saw, do you remember the episode of Breaking Bad? The crystal meth heads. The episode with the fridge, I think, or something, where he gets... I can't remember.
I've got a confession here. I didn't make it any way through season two of that.
Did you not?
No.
There is a point in Breaking Bad where it gets so depressing that you don't really want to continue.
I think that may have been what stopped me. But yeah. So if it's any way into season two, then yeah, count me out. I never made it.
Have you watched Suburra?
Yeah.
Do you not think Suburra is just like the best thing ever on TV?
Yeah. Well, it's more... It's certainly very believable, and it doesn't feel like drama, does it? It feels more like a documentary.
Would you like to be the boss of that part of the mafia boss in that part of Naples?
I don't think I'd want any part in any of it at all. I just think your life expectancy is going to be so depressingly low.
They seem to have very little fun. The only perk, it seems to me, is that they have four-wheel drive cars with armor plating and stuff. Probably.
I mean, you wouldn't want to need the armor plating, though, would you?
No. I mean, that's it. What I'm saying is, all they have is fancy cars. They don't even seem to have sex lives.
Hmm.
They don't seem to have any perks at all of being. It's just
the payoff is pretty bleak, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
So well, don't do drugs, kids.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, yeah, that is the thing.
So this is the Dick and James show coming out with a positive message about don't do drugs. Drugs are bad.
Mm.
Okay.
If it all gets... Do you regret not having any military skills?
I regret not joining the TA when I was younger. I think I could have had a really great little parallel career.
Interesting you say that. Can I just tell you my life regret?
Go on.
I realised... Well, did you listen to the Jamie Blackett podcast?
Not yet.
Very good. I was really delighted. It was a long podcast. Jamie Blackett is the leader of this kind of alliance in Scotland with George Galloway. Jamie's an old school sort of conservative, but George Galloway is obviously George Galloway. And they're trying to unite Scots against the kind of fascist tyranny of Nicola Sturgeon,
mm-hmm.
and make Scots realise that there is an alternative to this very nasty regime. Although God knows what luck they'll have now in this climate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think everywhere is going to be a kind of fascist regime. But Jamie, it turned out, after school, maybe went to university, I forget, went and joined a Guards regiment.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what he did?
He spent to drive around tanks.
Did he do that? I don't know. No, I think he was infantry.
Right.
But basically, every autumn hunting,
mm-hmm.
At the army's expense,
mm-hmm.
on probably army horses, every summer playing polo, the occasional small war, but nothing you're likely to get killed in, you know, mm-hmm. like Iraq, the first Gulf War, I think. He spent a year in Hong Kong with all these sort of gap year girls wanting to shag guards officers. And I was thinking, God, why didn't I spend, say, 6 years in a guards regiment? I
mean, it would have been great, and you'd have forever had that veteran badge to wear. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I served,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. I served several hotties in Hong Kong, and I really improved my fox hunting skills. I mean, yeah. So regrets.
Well, you know what? I wouldn't have made it anyway because I had mild asthma. They wouldn't. I wouldn't have got past the interview. So you know, it was never going to be.
But it is kind of sad, isn't it, Dick? That we are now the age in life where, even if it did all kick off, we wouldn't be much use, because we're not really the fighting age. We're almost the kind of the age where, what were those old men with pitchforks in the last year of 1945 in Germany?
Oh, I'm trying to think of the
the folk the something, you know,
folk storm. That basically Dad's Army, Dad's last ditch sort of World War One weapons and rudimentary uniforms, and just sent in as a, you know,
cannon fodder. In our heads, you and I are still 22, and we're
you know what
fit.
I think every man is. No matter what age, even dad. He was 85 and still going strong, of course. And, you know, he will say in his head, of course you're still 21.
Yeah.
You're not necessarily going to find fellow 85-year-old women attractive. And it's, you know.
They do, don't they?
What?
Well, people in their 80s find 80-year-old women attractive.
I think by necessity, really, isn't it?
No, I think it's think it's one of God's kindnesses to us all that we tend to find.
I appreciate a mature woman.
I mean, the thing is, like, it's like
I'm not talking old. I'm talking sort of my age and younger. But
what I mean is, it's one of those things where why is it that when your daughter reaches an age where you could conceivably marry somebody that age, you know, that wouldn't be kind of weird, say, you know, 21 or 22. I mean, it would be...
sort of rock star. Sort of rock star.
Yeah, exactly. Jimmy Page type territory.
Thing. Yeah.
But why is it that you don't fancy their friends? You know, because these are I mean, these are women as the right age where they look fantastic.
I think there's a natural censorship in yourself that prevents that from happening.
Well, there is that, but I think it is kind of God-given that imagine how difficult it would be when you get to your 50s like we are, and you spent your tongue was hanging out every time you saw a kind of 30-something or 20-something hottie going by. But you don't. You just think you blank them pretty much in the same way that
they
blank
us. I think
you
can still appreciate that they are pretty things and beautiful.
Yeah,
but there's nothing more than
that. Like looking at a racehorse.
Yeah.
But you don't want to shag it. you just think, yeah, that's going to look good over the fences or whatever. You know, I could put money on that.
Mm.
But it's a kind of disinterested.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. Anyway.
So did you clap for Heroes on Thursday? I should imagine you did.
Dick, it was like, I was like Nigel Farage on steroids.
Oh, you got all the pots and pans out and you were bashing them with ladles and...
I was bashing my bishop. I was bashing...
Who was it who said, it's unfortunate, I think it was one of our favourite Twitter people, I think it might have been Blackadder, or one of those of saying that it's a pity that coincides with his weekly al fresco wank. 8 o'clock was when he likes to go out onto his balcony and bash one out.
Yeah.
I think he may well have been alone out there at that time, because I don't think it was taken up by the masses with particular enthusiasm this time round.
At the beginning of last year, I was tempted to do a diary, because I could see it was going to be a funny old year.
Understatement of the year.
And it would have been very interesting had I written that diary, reading the sort of dawning enlightenment as I realised that what we thought was one thing was actually something else entirely. But I think we've now reached the point where, don't you think, where reality has got so unbelievable that we are living in clown world completely, and that is a classic example of that clown world we live in, where the government actually, despite everything we know, still imagines that we're going to go and clap for the NHS.
Our NHS.
Sorry, Dick.
You get this wrong every time.
I do, don't I?
They're always there for us, James.
They are.
Well, they're not, though, are they?
Well, that is kind of the problem. Cancer or anything that might kill you.
This is the NHS conversation. It goes like this. Why do you love the NHS so much? Well, it's free. Well, £1 billion every 70 hours isn't really free, is it? Yeah, but it's free at the point of service. But they're always there for us. Well, isn't that the problem, that they're not there for us at the moment, that you're not allowed to get ill because they can't cope with it? There's these circular conversations about our NHS, I think it was a very knowingly chosen thing. The people planning this whole thing were saying, right, they got the whiteboard out and they want to write on this whiteboard things people like. So come on, everyone, get your thinking caps on. Things people like, a hand goes up at the back, the NHS. Oh, well, everyone around the table go, oh, NHS, everyone loves NHS. So they write NHS on the board. Top of the list of things they know the British public like. So this whole
dogging.
Dogging. You're ruining my story dogging. Dogging didn't go up on the board. Okay. Maybe it did. And someone said, yes, it's a very good idea, Nigel. Can you write down dogging? But in column two, the column of things that we're going to safely ignore at the end of this brainstorm session.
Yeah.
So working around people's love of the NHS, I'm sure, was part of the whole plan. The Tories have always had a problem with NHS because no government is ever going to give them enough money. But for the Tories to come in there and say, what if we were to give them everything they wanted and write off all their debts? Maybe then we will no longer be the nasty party. Do you think there might be something in that?
What? So you mean the destruction of the fifth largest economy, the enslavement of its people, the elevation of demagogues like Piers Morgan, the turning of the police from your kind of, well, I mean,
friendly bobbies,
to Stasi, the people being encouraged to snoop on their neighbours by breakfast TV, people dying in droves of cancer and suicide, and all this has been done to stop the Conservatives being the nasty party.
No, I'm saying that the Conservatives had their plan to work with the Great Reset, but the way the Conservatives get the entire country on board and behind them is to deify the NHS, to turn it into the religion that it was so close to being anyway. It has completely supplanted the Church of England as the state religion. All they had to do was to come out in favour of it in every way and encourage people to do this weekly worship, which is what the clapping for the NHS is.
I was only expressing doubt at your theory because it was just so devilishly...
It wasn't an end in itself. It was a means to an end.
Yeah.
I mean, with a lot of my lockdown skeptic and generally skeptical friends, the religion side of this has been really one of the interesting things that's been coming out, because not only has the country been subtly changed over the last few decades, but religion has as well. The church has been gradually turned into something it never was before. And those
That's by the cathedral effect.
Yeah, no irony there, because, you know, cathedrals, etc. But I've been surprised at how many of my friends have turned out to be quietly Christian all this time.
Yes.
I'm quietly Christian. I've never really rubbed it in anyone's face.
Yes, me too.
I like churches, I like singing hymns, even like a few psalms, but I haven't been a regular church attender. But the more of my friends I talk to, I say, by the way, are you, it's a really, almost a really embarrassing question, it's almost like, do you like going dogging? Do you happen to be a Christian? And they go, they might make a face and go, yeah, I am actually. Surprising number of them. But it's just not a topic of conversation we've ever seen fit to have before, because they are quietly Christian. You know, that they will do to others, you know, do as thou willst be done. Is that the way it goes?
Well, do as you will be done by. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Do as thou willst be done.
Well, I quite liked your version. It's probably one of the many variants that you...
But yeah, so there's a lot of people there feeling utterly betrayed by the church as it stands at the moment, that they managed to close down all worship on the grounds that it was non-essential. Can you see any other religion allowing that to happen? Declaring your services non-essential?
Yeah, I know. It's you think about I once watched this documentary about that medieval historian who wrote the book, the unreadable book, because it's just too dense, about saints. But he does very good medieval history, on the BBC. And he was talking about the plague years, about the Black Death, and he visited this monastery in a church, I think one of the cathedrals in Paris, and there were it was on vellum manuscripts or something, showing the monks who were keeping this manuscript updated. Gradually, you could see them dying basically, mm-hmm. as they wrote it. And I was thinking, even in the bubonic plague, even the Black Death did not stop the church ministering to people,
mm-hmm.
and doing its job.
Yeah,
that is the job of the church. I mean, the idea that the priests are not there to provide that service, and that churches aren't open to provide that service, seems to me to be defeating the object of being the church.
Well, they
it's like being a fireman and going, well, but look, that building's really hot. I can't go there. I mean, you know, it's a yeah. safety hazard.
Quite. I mean, we do have a holy man within our group, and I won't name names, obviously, but he struggles with what he's having to do right now, and it's a bit of a hard sell to try and tell the government that looking after people's immortal souls is quite an important job, but you can't really quantify it, can you? I mean, if he was stopped driving his car, and where are you going right now? Well, I'm off to read someone their last rites. So, well, is that really essential, sir? Can you give me any tangible reason why that is an important thing for you to be doing right now?
Oh.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Unless you have some Christian belief, you could write it off as simply not being important.
Well, we are definitely a post-Christian culture. I'm sure I've told you the story before about how I went back to school and I met one of the old, a history teacher who was there when we were there, who taught us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, oh, that was right, it was Roy Allen.
Right.
And it was about his last term, I think, before retiring.
Roy was great.
And yeah, and he told me that this would have been about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He told me that he could no longer rely on boys coming from prep schools knowing the basics of the Bible, knowing that what happened at the wedding at Cana,
raising of Lazarus, water into wine,
exactly. And, I mean, if you're denied the stories of the Bible, you've been deracinated from our culture.
Yeah.
I mean, since we were, the evangelists came over to convert the pagan Britons to Christianity, I mean, Britain has been a Christian culture. It's literature, everything. And yet in our lifetime, this is we've been cut off.
Well, we've even got our next monarch has already decided he's not going to be the defender of the faith.
No,
he's going to be the defender of faith, which is such a cop out, isn't it? I mean, we've also got a future monarch
who's welcomed the Great Reset. Of course he is. So I mean, you know, never mind. Anyway. Yeah, it's a war between good and evil. I think we've established that before.
The last point I would like to make, and it's typically Dick, light-hearted, silly.
Good.
But with a point.
Oh, yeah.
I found my new favourite show on Netflix. And we found it flicking through Netflix, as you do. And I have a daughter who, as I earlier described, she has completed Netflix. She's watched everything there because we've had so many months of lockdown that she's worked her way through just about everything. So of an evening, the three of us are flicking through the channels trying to find something that she hasn't seen. And this one comes up and it's called Warrior Nun. And it kind of like a cross between Buffy the Vampire Slayer Harry Potter and one of those things with girlies like Clueless or what have
you. Oh, it sounds so shit.
It sounds like it should be awful.
And it is. But
it's about a hapless, pretty girl who, through no fault of her own, ends up with an angel's halo embedded in her back, which gives her superpowers, and she finds herself having to be trained up to become a warrior nun. And so she's taking on these really quite terrifically realized demons, and there's swords and there's shields and there's all mystical stuff. I'm loving it. I'm three episodes in.
But you're probably doing it to please your daughter.
No, I genuinely am enjoying it.
How much wokery is
that? Daughter turns around to me and says, you know what? If religion could be sold to me as this exciting, as there being genuine demons prowling around and you defeat them with superpowers and it's super nuns against the monstrous demons with flaming eyes and all this sort of stuff. She said, I could quite get on board with the whole Christianity thing. Unfortunately, that's not really how it's being sold. So I think we could engage the young in an interest in their natural religion, Christianity, in this country, if there was a little bit more of the sort of the whole demons are real thing. What do you think about that one?
Well, look, I think when I read Tom Holland's book on Dominion about the history of Christianity,
mm-hmm.
I realized that Christianity is quite a tough sell, in as much as it involves doing stuff like turning the other cheek. It involves ultimately the last shall come first, for example. So it all our sort of worldly instincts,
mm-hmm.
that like we want to be strong and powerful,
yeah,
and we want to be rich and according to the Christian message, that actually a rich man can't pass through the eye of the needle, it's not sexy, but in a way its lack of sexiness is what's so cool and pure about
mm-hmm.
it. That, you know, the one thing that struck me reading Holland's book, the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. You realize just how much of the religion has been paved with the hideous suffering of any number of Christian martyrs, and that even
it is
now,
a tough sell, Christianity,
even
really, isn't
even
it?
Now that, but at the same
there's no
time,
72 virgins for you,
no. But at the same
not
time,
not that anyone would want 72 virgins, but that's another story.
Well, you know, no, you wouldn't want
72
virgins.
Experienced girls. Now we're talking.
Exactly. That's, well, going back to that thing about, you know, when we look at 18-year-old girls, we don't think four. We just think like you're completely unformed. You don't know. You wouldn't know anything.
Give me someone who knows what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. but at the same time, you realise that it is precisely that. Mix of rigor and that, you know, yea though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil. This kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, what was I going to say to you? Before we go, have you seen James?
James?
It's a new Netflix thing.
Is it based on your life?
I'm really into it. No, it's not at all. It's about this guy who used to be a quite successful journalist.
Right.
And then he became a bit more niche as he hit middle age. And the world turned to shit as it was a massive takeover by the forces of evil.
You know? Sounds a bit far-fetched.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I know, but bear with me. And this guy had... you wouldn't guess it to look at him because he was quite sort of slightly built, but he had loads and loads of really fuck off skills, like he can like ride a horse really well,
right? Mostly,
and he's got these martial arts skills, and he's got this basement full of this most amazing, you know the scene in To the Lake, with the old Russian guy with all the weaponry,
yeah.
He's got way more than those.
Is it like the scene in Matrix where they go into the weapons room?
Yeah, it probably is.
The white bit when all the weaponry slides in on shelves.
It's like that, but better.
All right.
Really shiny guns that can do all sorts of... Like, so like there's Barrett sniper rifle, 50 cal rifles. There's MG42s, just like, but still with their original boxing and with the greased up so that they're in perfect condition.
Nice, yeah. Practical.
What? Don't.
You need a team to fire an MG42.
Yeah, no, but that's the thing. That's just the first episode.
All right.
Then people come to him and they think he's just a kind of sort of tinfoil hat blogger type person. But they turn out that he turns out that he's the leader of the resistance.
Right. Fantastic. Well, I've got to latch onto this one. I can't believe I've missed it.
No.
James, you say it's James. Called. Right. Okay.
James. Yeah. So I think...
I think of a way of remembering that.
I think it's time that we went off our separate ways into our houses.
I'm sure our respective wives
have gin
cooked up something delicious for us.
And they probably have some gin
that'd be nice.
Waiting for us, don't they? Have we covered it off all the...
I think we've done our bit.
I think we've done our bit. We've rambled on.
How long have we done?
Leaves are falling all around. Time I was on my way. Yeah, an hour and 15.
That's plenty.
Ramble on.
Ramble on.
Ramble on. Right, okay, that's enough. Oh, and listen, don't forget, everyone, while they still last, to support me on my Patreon and my Subscribestar, because maybe I'll build up, I have to build a new platform at some stage, but at the moment I haven't been booted off. And it's a really good community. I mean, we need each other in these dark times, and actually I do write some really good articles. You haven't seen them, Dick.
But Pa was telling me about them today.
My exclusive patrons-only articles, and you get bonuses and stuff as well. I mean...
Easter eggs.
I don't know why people buy newspapers or go. Subscribe to the mainstream media anymore at all. It's a complete waste of
money. Gave it up in March.
Yeah. So come and support me instead. Right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.